KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
It is, and I don't know what's happening where you are. I started to sprinkle outside the studios of KLYT. More expected, I guess, in the coming hours. I don't know if it get cold enough to snow, but I think winter is, you know, really arrived. I mean, what was it? December 22nd was the date, but the temperatures are hitting real close to 20 degrees over the weekend in the next few days. Just be aware, you know, the whole plumbing and pipes thing. I know I'm going to be trickling some water here in the next week or so. It's those sustained low temperatures that will get you, so be careful. Hey, want to highlight this. Family Life Weekend to Remember is coming up. It's February 6th through the 8th. That's a Friday through Sunday. And no marriage is static. Each day, each choice, you're either moving closer together toward oneness or drifting farther apart. At the intersection of a faith-based marriage conference and romantic retreat for those attending, from a retreat from everyday life, Weekend to Remember helps couples do just that, choose oneness. And if you want to find out more about attending this event, go to familylife.com/weekend to remember. In the next week or so, we expect to have one of the speakers, or maybe multiple speakers, on this show to kind of give you a taste for what's going to happen. But if you've attended before, you know it's worth the investment in your marriage. And actually, something to consider is going again and bringing maybe another couple with you to Weekend to Remember. familylife.com/weekend to remember, and you'll continue to hear the promotion for that as we draw closer to it. Friday February 6th through Sunday, February 8th. We're spending a full hour today with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, and walking through several of the posts that he's put at Errors of Enchantment. And Paul in studio. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
And Happy New Year, actually.
Exactly. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Belated, of course.
Yeah.
Last on a month ago, so that means I haven't seen you since early December.
Yeah, and I thought of you over the last holiday weekend. I'll tell you why, and you'll know quickly probably where I'm headed with this before we get into other statewide issues. I drove between here and Arkansas over the last the New Year holiday weekend, and Paul, you came to mind.
All right. Was it the banjo?
No, it was it was the roads.
Ah, yes.
I know it's a hot button, and I'm going to go there. But you know, your concern is real. It's true. And it couldn't be more black and white hitting the state line.
Yeah, or bumpy versus smooth, I guess,
yeah,
would be
when it
comes to the roads.
Yeah, not black and white, is bumpy smooth, yes.
Yes.
You were in my thoughts, brother.
All right, well, thank you, yes. I'll be setting off myself for a little trip down I-40 this weekend. My daughter's in a volleyball tournament in Amarillo, Texas.
So yeah.
Aside from testing out the interstates,
I made my first stop at Buc-ee's.
We'll be heading up to the Buc-ee's as well. So they better have those Buc-ee's nuggies.
My first ever. Everyone was like,
oh,
really?
Wow.
Really?
You're a virgin. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it everything that you wanted more?
It's exactly what I expected. And I wasn't, I was totally walked away, you know, not necessarily impressed or disappointed. That's kind of what I expected. Kind of a glorified gas stop. But
very glorified.
Yes. Yeah. But at any rate, we have plenty to talk about.
Yes, we do.
And I'm looking forward to this. Our legislative session is getting underway in less than 2 weeks on January 20th. And you put together the first blog we're going to look at is looking at New Mexico's legislative, the headline, New Mexico's legislative Democrats' rhetoric highlights failure to address medical provider shortage, not success.
Yeah. Now, there is a bit of good news here, and this is an article written in the Albuquerque Journal by State Rep. Linda Trujillo and State Senator Katie Duhigg, both of whom I would describe as fairly progressive Democrats. So they are in the majority in the legislature, and they are talking about one of the compacts relating to medical providers that have become a real issue in New Mexico, along with many other aspects of the medical provider shortage. So they are touting the fact that after a lot of back and forth and negotiation and this, that, and the other, that it looks like during the upcoming legislative session, New Mexico will finally join its second compact. There are a total of 10. The second one involves medical doctors, so a doctor compact. Because, of course, medical providers and doctors, you could draw the Venn diagram. Medical providers, doctors are one group of those medical providers. They're certainly not the only group of medical providers. This is a good thing, and I hope it does come to fruition during this upcoming legislative session. 42 other states are already in the medical provider compact, so this will enlarge somewhat the pool of providers that we have to choose from in the state, or that can come and work in our state. But we should be doing these things much more proactively. We shouldn't have to have so much political pressure brought to bear to do something that's quite honestly just basic common sense. This will be the second compact. I mentioned nurses being the other compact that we're already involved in. But we are not in the psychologist, physical therapist, occupational therapist, counselors, physician assistants, dentist and dental hygienist, audiologist, or emergency medical service personnel compacts. And unless something happens that I'm not been apprised of during this session, I suspect we will not wind up in any of those compacts after this session as well. So a bit of good news, but they almost throw their shoulders out, patting themselves on the back here for something that, again, 42 other states. That's a pretty good indicator when 42 other states are in something.
Yeah.
It's not really a partisan issue, because you kind of run out of red states and blue states at that point. It's really just states.
And we're not on the front of the wave with this.
Not at all. Not at all. And, of course, they talk about how they had to go in and negotiate on New Mexico's behalf to make sure they didn't impact this, that, and the other law.
Oh, everyone's a little bit of a spin doctor.
Yes, we are very special here in New Mexico. This is a start. Now, we'll see, and this is one of the issues I think that we would flag as a absolutely top-tier policy debate and discussion that we're going to be seeing up in the legislature. It's only a 30-day session. This is theoretically a budget session. But, of course, the governor, as we know in this and other years, always puts some items on the agenda for discussion. This is, of course, also Governor Lujan Grisham's swan song. She is a lame duck as she leaves office.
Do you anticipate that at all, being a lame duck, that she may be more likely to do things that wouldn't be pleasing to the progressive members of the Roundhouse?
That's a definite maybe. We'll see on that one.
Yeah.
One of the issues, of course, associated with the medical provider shortage and these compacts are just one of many issues. We should be having a very all-hands-on-deck approach to this. But if we had an all-hands-on-deck approach to medical providers or other issues, we wouldn't be in half the predicaments that we are as a state. There are rumblings. There are rumors at this point. Nothing specific, and bills have been filed up in Santa Fe. We're going to be waiting to see how these bills shake out, but rumblings have been felt indicating that the governor may be willing to actually address medical malpractice as an issue. Now, that is a start. That is a huge win if she's willing to, you know, kind of use the power of the bully pulpit and say that she would sign this bill and really put those medical malpractice attorneys on notice, saying, hey, we need to do something as a state in order to keep our medical providers here. Will she do that? I don't know. I've heard rumblings. But that is something we're going to be looking at and watching in this upcoming legislative session as well. Well,
and the next time you and I get together, we'll probably have a better pulse on where all that is headed.
Well, absolutely. We will be convening again in early February. The session, for those who don't know, begins the day after Martin Luther King Day. That's in about a week and a half, Tuesday, the 20th of January, and it runs on a 30-day clock that will conclude in about mid to late March. So, yeah, we will convene again about halfway through the legislative session.
That'll be good. All right, well, listen, we're up against a break, and this is a great start to the show. When we come back, child care is the topic, and we'll, you know, I'm sure mention a couple of states in that, Minnesota and New Mexico, when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, in Valencia County, tonight is the beginning of the Truth Project at Calvary Chapel New Harvest in Los Lunas on Main Street there. It's actually Main Street right next to Los Lentes Road, if you're familiar with the area. But if you're in that area, you may consider being part of this 13-week video series put together by Focus on the Family over a decade ago. It's a groundbreaking small group curriculum on the biblical worldview. And it's looking at life from that biblical perspective. Dr. Del Tackett is essentially the host. He takes you through the 13 videos on the relevance and importance of living the biblical worldview in daily life. It features insights as well from biblical experts like R.C. Sproul, Oz Guinness, and Gordon Pennington. I went through this, I don't know, when it came out, you know, over a decade ago, and is recommended. CalvaryNHLL.com has the information for tonight's event. It's CalvaryNHLL. That's New Harvest Los Lunas. So CalvaryNHLL.com. And I'm sure if you just showed up tonight at 6 o'clock, you'd be welcome to take part in that study. Check it out, the Truth Project, starting tonight. And if you missed tonight, next Thursday night will be the next evening. So you'll find it on their site, CalvaryNHLL.com. Full hour with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation. And in this segment, we're going to talk about child care, starting with the blog, Paul, that you wrote, Minnesota Child Care Scandal, A Cautionary Tale for New Mexico. And I'll tell you before we jump in, about 24 hours before I saw this, and I saw it posted, I think the day you posted it, I had said to a family member, I said, they just started this whole free child care thing in New Mexico. Can hold those in New Mexico accountable, I would surely look close at what's going on.
Yes, of course, this is a story that exploded over the holidays. A gentleman named Nick Shirley, a young guy, kind of a YouTuber, blogger, whatnot.
21, I think, right?
It's in his early 20s.
Yeah.
He's in Minneapolis looking at some of these child care centers that predominantly Somali immigrants had organized and were, in many ways, I think it's safe to say, fraudulent, resulting in, among other things, Tim Walz, the current governor, former vice presidential candidate, abandoning his race for re-election. So a very impactful story, and I can tell you that the post I put up on our Facebook page had possibly the biggest traction in terms of likes and engagement than any Facebook post I've ever put up.
Wow.
on our page. So people are fired up about this. And what I basically wanted to do with the post and with this conversation we're going to have here is highlight some of the similarities and differences between what's going on or what potentially is happening in New Mexico versus Minnesota. So first and foremost, Minnesota does not do free childcare. Theirs is subsidized by the federal government, but they don't have the state component. New Mexico is doing both universal and free. Most of the states that have the federal child care, they have some money that they are theoretically collecting from the users. It is a smaller program in Minnesota at 22,000 children. New Mexico's, even before the governor officially made it free on November 1st, at least for the time being, was already at 33,000 children and is likely to grow very dramatically, probably close to doubling if she gets her way during this upcoming legislative session. Minnesota, though, as a state, has 5.8 million people to New Mexico's 2.1 million. So you're really talking about a state with triple the number of people, but a program that's quite a bit smaller. And so you look at this and you say, well, if this kind of fraud is happening in another state like Minnesota that has a smaller, less generous program, are we doing enough, or is a plan in place to do enough to keep a lid on fraud and abuse like we see up in Minnesota? And the simple answer is no. You know, we've heard a lot of talk in New Mexico as this plan has been rolled out about adequacy or lack thereof of number of daycare center spots, slots for these kids, because, you know, you suddenly make something free and all the taxpayer funded bells and whistles. And, you know, a lot of people are expected to take advantage of this program. And what they do have, and you can go to the ECECD.NM.gov website, the Early Child Care Department in New Mexico, and you can go on and find different reports. They do site visits of these facilities as they exist in New Mexico and look at a wide variety of things. But I did that, and let's just say I saw a little bit lacking in terms of the detail in these reports and whether these child care centers were actually handing over full information. Of course, we don't even know exactly how many kids are in them. We haven't had people show up like Nick Shirley did directly at the doors. And of course, I would eagerly love to see a sign around New Mexico with a quality Learing Center,
you had to go
learning
there.
Center. But this is we are on a different track, but a similar track from what's going on in Minnesota. And this program is potentially rife with abuse, let alone the safety and the conditions that we're going to be putting large numbers of New Mexico children in, and whether that is actually going to be adequate as well. So fascinating stuff. Nick Shirley, kudos to him for the exposure of this and the political impact he's having. And hopefully, you know, with the Trump administration cutting off funding for some of these states and their programs, this is yet again, if we just followed the U.S. Constitution, there is absolutely nothing at all in the U.S. Constitution about the federal government supporting child care programs. This is not what we should be doing in this country. And I'm not saying that I'm opposed to any government involvement in child care. I am simply saying that the federal government, like food stamps, like Medicaid, like so many other programs, they've gotten into the game and then they just flush money down the toilet. And state officials have a tendency to, you know, try to suck in that money because they consider it economic development, or corrupt individuals or groups of individuals also can engage in fraud and abuse. And I think we're setting ourselves up for a similar situation, if not potentially worse, here in New Mexico if we go down this path.
Well, and for those who aren't up to speed on the amount of fraud that has been detected, earlier, I don't know, last week, I saw Senator Kennedy in Congress walking through stuff and saying about $1 billion of fraud had been found, and within a week, I mean, that number, you know, they estimated had gone up to like $8 or $9 billion, and I heard another report saying that that dwarfs fraud that's expected in states like California, where they expect it to be in double digits there. And Paul, you and I haven't spoke much off the air. I don't know. I mentioned to you off the air, though, I saw J.D. Vance, our vice president, in a press conference today. And he mentioned that under the president's direction that Pam Bondi will be signing an under AG, mm-hmm. Their specific task will be to search out fraud like this. Whether or not that would have an impact here in New Mexico, I don't know, because, and I was listening to most of what you said, any federal money involved in what's happening here, or and I know it's state, but...
In New Mexico?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that would include investigation here, yep. as well. Well, I don't know about investigations. Accountability through the federal government would be expected through that new office, which they haven't announced who it is, and they anticipate putting him through the approval process in Congress as quickly as they can. You know, it takes time to create the position and get that going, but accountability, it seems, is on the way.
Well, that's the thing, is that, yes, rooting out fraud and abuse is a component of all of this, and it's absolutely a worthwhile activity. But the problem with these programs is the way they are set up. And I've mentioned Medicaid and the way that states like New Mexico get $3 for every $1 they put up. Now, are we as a country ready to unpack Medicaid and really take a look at the dependency and the problems and the fraud and the waste and abuse? No, unfortunately, we're not. Maybe in this childcare area,
yeah,
we can get Congress on board and the president and really have a serious approach to these programs and to dial them back and to increase the level of transparency and accountability. That's about all we can expect.
Yeah.
There is, simply put, and again, I've talked about this before, and as a, you know, we're on a Christian radio station here, little kids and babies belong with, yeah, mom and dad at home, not in a government funded institution. And The Economist magazine, a middle of the road, very well respected publication, did a great deal of research and highlighted that universal free childcare actually negatively impacts kids. And it's really not even close.
And actually,
very serious problems.
Actually, I'm glad you brought Jesus back into it. I was thinking the same thing, that as a church, you know, we need to do what we can to support single moms that need,
absolutely,
help in this area. Relieve grandparents that are co-parenting, perhaps. Although, I think that if they're willing to do that, I think that's spectacular, their investment in their family. But, you know, in many ways, and we've brought this up on this show before, the church in general has left to the government what the church really should have been doing in the first place, and in some ways continues to do. But you know, once it's given to the government, Paul, it's awfully hard to get it all back.
Yeah, just in general, as adults, as families, as parents, we should not be eager to hand our kids off to governments, bodies,
amen,
and institutions.
Hey, Paul, with the session coming up and healthcare supposedly being the budget being a primary part of the session being labeled as such, right? Do you anticipate this coming up during the session?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Well, let me just further add a bit of detail there. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the dueling budgets of the legislature and the governor. And, you know, we are here, like I said, a week and a half from the start of the session, the day after Martin Luther King Day, January 20th. The governor put her budget out and indeed funded, as she would, this expansion of child care. The program is currently in place, taking a program that was for 400% of federal poverty level families and below, about $128,000 for a family of four, well above the median income for a family in New Mexico. So it's already a very generous program, and make it universal. Currently costs the state $450 million. Expanding it adds $400 million to the overall cost, but they're trying this over a drip, drip, drip time frame with this governor. She's basically hoping to make this a legacy and force the next governor to and legislature to fund this program.
And well, how much of that is coming out of the $62 billion surplus?
None in that's the permanent funds. There is a early childhood child care permanent fund that specifically is one of the components of this. If you want to go down a rabbit hole, then yeah, look into all the different pots of money and sources of money. So a substantial part, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred million dollars from the feds. Then you have recently set up early child care fund, but you do have a fair amount of general fund dollars still at stake. So the legislature is only going to consider the general fund aspect, because they've already set up this, and this is one of the problems for democracy, for good government, for accountability. You set these things on autopilot, and there's zero accountability. But the legislature, as I was getting towards, I'll just mention the legislature's budget, which was released today, does not, or maybe yesterday, but it doesn't include this money. So these are Democrats broadly sympathetic to this governor, saying, no, our budget is not going to include the additional funding for the early universal free child care. Now, what this means, she obviously needs the legislature to get on board to make this a permanent program moving forward. What that debate looks like is going to be unfolding in the 30 days after the legislative session begins on the 20th.
All right. Hey, if you just tuned in, it's full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to come back and cover some more posts that Paul's made there, including it looks like an endorsement from overt socialists that are looking New Mexico's way. We'll get to that when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect, a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation and Errors of Enchantment. We've already covered several stories that Paul wrote for Errors of Enchantment in the first half of the show. If you missed that, we'd encourage you to go to the archive when it's posted at abqconnect.online. And Paul, actually, before we move on to your next blog post, I want to give a little bit of attention to Tipping Point, New Mexico. What's recently posted there, and what can the audience look forward to here in the near future?
Boy, we've really had a string of fantastic interviews. Just posted today is a conversation I had with Michael Perry. He is a Republican running for Commissioner of Public Lands in the state of New Mexico. Very powerful and important office. How we manage those lands and what they produce, both in terms of the resources themselves, but also the money that is brought in to fund our schools and whatnot. Check that conversation out. I thought it was a really great opportunity to find out more about an important election coming up next November. Talk to Steve Pierce over the holidays. He has a new book out, You Had a Good Home, But You Left. It's, you know, of course, Steve Pierce, former Republican Party chair in New Mexico, former congressman. He's also a pilot, and he flew around the world, and I don't know. I'm not a plane guy. I wish I was a plane guy.
Just fly the plane, stupid.
He had that one.
Yeah.
But he flew a little, let's just put it as a little plane, all the way around the entire planet in memory of and to kind of generate and media attention for people who came back from Vietnam and struggled with that. Talked to Duke Rodriguez recently, who's one of the candidates for governor on the Republican side. Steve Lanier, a bunch of great conversations. And I'll be sitting down with Gail Armstrong, the Republican House Minority Leader, as well in the near future. So a lot of good conversations up there at Tipping Point, New Mexico.
Okay, and no shortage of content. The Mike Perry interview, the candidate you mentioned for Commissioner of Public Lands, episode number 774. Paul, well done.
Thank you. Yes, a little bit of staying power there. We've been at it for quite a while. And yeah, check out Tipping Point New Mexico on your favorite podcast software, or tippingpointsnm.com on the internet. And you can find all the podcasts there.
All right, let's move on to another blog post you put at Errors of Enchantment. That's errorsofenchantment.com, by the way. And listen, what Paul does through the Rio Grande Foundation, it's a nonprofit organization. If you want to find out more about it, we do encourage you to go to the website. There's great tools and resources for you at riograndefoundation.org, and a place for you if you appreciate Paul's work. And the information that's provided for you to support them financially as a nonprofit, riograndefoundation.org. Paul, the blog titled New Mexico Receives Praise/Comparisons from Overt Socialist Mamdani and Bernie Sanders. What did they have to say?
Well, there's two different things that are to be discussed here. One is a publication here in New Mexico, New Mexico In Depth, with a reporter who apparently used to work at the New York Times, wrote an article highlighting some of the ways in which Zoran Mamdani, the new New York City mayor, socialist, avowed it's taking a page out of New Mexico's public policies, and it's a much more favorable story than the one I did last summer in National Review, in which I highlighted a couple of policies that are already on the books here in New Mexico that Zoran Mamdani is advocating for. And one of those is free buses. The other one is, of course, this free childcare that we just talked about in the last segment. But then, as if to just put the cherry on top of that little socialist sundae for us, Bernie Sanders, yes, the Bernie Sanders, independent socialist senator from Vermont, noted.
They have good syrup.
They have good syrup. And, you know, if you don't mind the politics, Ben and Jerry's is a fine ice cream. But Bernie touted New Mexico's free child care efforts as something that he advocates for. Now, of course, it is worth highlighting that, you know, socialists have a reputation, not actually earned, of standing up for the poor and the downtrodden, when in reality, I believe Bernie and Zoran Mamdani and his ilk have a much more ideological fixation on growing the size of government and expanding its role and people's dependency on it, and that's the way they achieve political and personal success. So does it matter to Bernie Sanders that free childcare is going to the wealthiest New Mexicans, above 400% of the federal poverty level, all the way up to the very, very wealthiest in the state? No, it doesn't. He wants that new government program with new people taking, you know, our tax dollars and using it for whatever government benefit is being provided. So it really doesn't matter what the program does in reality for the socialists to support it. Now, of course, it is worth noting that Mr. Mamdani, you know, running as a socialist and with all this you know, debate about how real of a socialist he is, stated, you know, this is not something that he said off the cuff. This is not something that he did in a response to a reporter question. He had it in his speech, and somebody said, yes, this is a great idea. You should run with this. Zoran Mondami, we will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism. That is enough, if I'm a New Yorker, to pack my bags and get out of Dodge.
And I don't have the Joseph Stalin quote, but I want to say I saw, you know, a side-by-side quote that essentially said the exact same thing.
Absolutely. You know, collectivism is inherently government force
and these
driving
are,
that.
This is why it's important to listen and understand words and what people are saying that you may not hear them saying.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, rugged individualism, we can argue whether, you know, I would say that America was in many ways founded on rugged individualism. Government's always been there, but it's certainly a society from its founding that has always valued individual freedom and liberty and the ability to captain your own ship, so to speak, free of the constraints of social class, as we saw even in Europe and England. But, you know, just in general, that we were able to in this country start businesses and change careers and create relationships with different people of different races and religions and whatnot that haven't been always the case in other countries where collectivism is much bigger and stronger of a force. And it's obviously government is always at the point of the spear when you talk about collectivism. That doesn't mean that the collectivist mindset is only a government mindset, but it is scary to hear that kind of rhetoric come out of any politician's mouth. But like I said, New York City, the largest city in the country, the financial center of the United States, it is going to be a interesting and rough 4 years, I think, for that city.
All right. Hey, if you just tuned in, it's been a full hour so far with Paul Gessing, president of Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. We're covering stories that Paul posted at errorsofenchantment.com. We also mentioned Tipping Point New Mexico. That website is tippingpointnm.com on the web. We're going to take a quick break and come back with a little bit more to wrap up today's show with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation right after this on ABQ Connect. All right. Hey, thanks for joining us. We've been spending a full hour with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and covering some articles, some posts that he put at errorsofenchantment.com. Before we press on, coming up this weekend is a documentary that may be of interest to you and your family. Not appropriate for the kids, though. Let me walk you through this. It's called Hashtag Save Our Children. It's going to be a documentary shown at Calvary Church Albuquerque on Osuna, west of Jefferson, this Saturday, or Sunday, excuse me, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock after all the weekend services. And it's a documentary that shines a light on sexually explicit material found in APS libraries and classrooms. Come on out. See the evidence for yourself. It's free to attend. You can hear from local parents and experts. I know that Vince Torres is scheduled to be speaking at the event. So if you have questions or things you want to cover, listen, this is a good venue to do it, and Vince will have some great encouragement for parents and some great things of instruction or advice or just, you know, to walk through how, as parents, we can combat what's happening in these libraries. But they'll have practical ways to help protect and advocate for our kids. And if you want to find out more, go to Calvary's website. Again, this event is for adults only. It's not appropriate for children, so find a place for the kiddos to be. The details are on the website at calvarynm.church. Paul, had you heard of that documentary?
No, I had not. It was the one that was in the theaters a couple years ago. That was the one that I'm familiar with, but child trafficking, but not this new one.
Hashtag Save Our Children. But that'll be this Sunday at Calvary Church Albuquerque at 1 o'clock.
But Vince Torres is great.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Wish I could have him on the show more often, but he's a busy guy, as are you. And actually, the other thing I wanted to say to our listeners about Errors of Enchantment. Listen, we covered some stories on today's broadcast. Paul has other material that is relevant, and you may want to, you know, Paul, the one you wrote about the new normal Railrunner ridership level, off, you know, on a new lower level than before COVID.
Yeah.
And other art. There's all kinds of stuff there we're not covering today.
Right. Well, since you mentioned, I'll just briefly mention that every year, like on my New Year's agenda, I put an information request into the Railrunner folks and the bus system folks here in Albuquerque, just finding out what the ridership levels look like. And the ridership of the Railrunner, it's somewhere in the low 600,000s for a year, because of course we end a year, and so I want to get the 2025 data. So this is a train that's been around since the Richardson days. It's been around for a long time now, but back in 2010, 11, and 12, when it was brand new and it was really popular, it was getting about 1.2 million people annually. That declined fairly rapidly. Before COVID, it was 780,000 annual riders, so it was well down from its peak. And then COVID came along, and of course ridership was nil for a few years there, but then after COVID, everybody kind of mostly went back to normal. The Railrunner still down significantly from that. And as a kicker, you know, we hear a lot about CO2 emissions and the environment from our governor, but the Legislative Finance Committee, the state, its own researchers, looked at the Railrunner's CO2 emissions and found that it was more impactful, more CO2 emissions from the Railrunner than if you drove your car up to Santa Fe. So not only are we wasting a lot of money from the state on the Railrunner, we're increasing CO2 pollution or emissions.
Yeah. I think I saw a recent article that the ice cap is actually expanding again.
Yeah, well, I don't go into the science. Well,
they've left behind warming and have gone with
right,
climate change.
All these policies to address climate change, we should at least address ones that exacerbate the situation while costing a lot of money.
Hey, let's make sure we take a little time to touch on this final post that you put, where you had a chance to discuss our governor's National Guard deployment as they depart.
Yeah, I talked to Channel 7 about this, and it happened right before the holidays, where it was announced that the governor was ending the $7 million investment that she had used our tax dollars to put National Guard troops, you could say, on the streets. Really, these were not law enforcement officers. They were bookkeepers
administrative,
and behind-the-scenes administrators. They were not armed. They were not dressed in camouflage. They were dressed in polo shirts, and at best they had mace or something like that. And it's fascinating. Of course, the timing of this is critical, because this happened after the runoff election, which saw Tim Keller get his third term in office. It's safe to say that the governor is not enamored with Tim Keller, but she did kick this story and this issue back until after he was safely reelected. So she did him a solid, because the comments that she made and some of her people made about Tim Keller in the wake of the National Guard being pulled out of Albuquerque are incredible. There was a meeting after the National Guard was coming in here, and the governor noted that Tim Keller just failed to show up. He said he would, and he didn't show up.
He says crime's down.
Well, crime is down, and that's a national thing. I don't think it has anything directly to do with what the mayor's done or any of that, success. It's just the governor did note that also, and some of her people noted, that, Sarita Nair, who used to work for Keller but now works for the state and the governor, wrote that without any data, the state must rely on its own conclusions. We have no reports on whether the streets are cleaner or safer, or if 311 calls have abated. Our team regularly travels through the International District. Here in Albuquerque, there's not a single street in the focus area that does not have an encampment, a hub of illicit activity, as well as litter and other blight.
Hey, we're out of time. Paul, thank you. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.